Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 618 for comics originally released on June 12th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Hawkman number 13. Now, I think we've both been reading this the entire time, correct?
Yes, I have.
And both enjoying it, I think, the entire time.
Yes, very good book, a good writer.
I think Venditti's really doing some good stuff. This was both typical of the series, yet a little unusual for the series, because it's kind of a done-in-one story, which really, I mean, there's been continuing threads throughout the whole run, but because he's investigating kind of, or exploring the different lives of Hawkman across time and space, it's gotten the feel of a done-in-one, even though it's got the continued story.
Yes, that's how I felt. And this one felt very different than other issues that we've read in the past.
Yeah. While it followed the same pattern, it was different because this really, I enjoyed the story, but it felt like it should have been in like a holiday special.
Yeah, I would agree. I liked the story, but like you said, it felt like something quick and I hate to say like almost meaningless or no impact to it.
Well, not meaningless. It felt to me like a riff on that whole Christmas truce ceasefire during World War One.
Yes, that and a little bit of Groundhog Day with the repeating over and over.
Yes, yes. it was an enjoyable story, but it felt a little bit more disconnected from everything else because I couldn't see the relevance of this planet, him going, because what happens is Hawkman is reincarnated as a soldier in this war and quickly gets killed, and then reincarnates as a soldier in this war, but on the other side, and quickly gets killed, and then gets reincarnated. And apparently when he gets reincarnated, he gets, like, awoken or whatever, when he's an adult.
Yes, every time, and he switches sides every time.
Until finally it's, you know, enough of this, let's, you know, maybe we can do this without fighting kind of a thing.
Yes.
And it was good, but like I said, it felt a little disconnected from the ongoing narrative. We saw aspects of his ship, like the museum and stuff, that cool, but hadn't seen that before. I was particularly curious about the Transformer-looking version we saw there. Don't know what's
Me
up
too.
With that. What was interesting, and I don't know if Will Conrad, the artist, did this intentionally or not, but there was an aspect of the design of the interior here that, while not, like, identical to the satellite, Justice League satellite from the satellite era, it was reminiscent of, and I think that was built using some Thanagarian tech as well.
Oh, okay. And see, I didn't notice that. So, that's very interesting. Now, this was really cool for me. I wanted to know more about that suit of armor. Mm-hmm. And I liked this story because, like you said, it dealt with the lives of Hawkman. And he's lived so many lives over the centuries and eons and years. But at the same time, it was weird because it's like I liked the issue. I didn't like the issue for different reasons because I didn't like it because I'm like it felt so different and so disconnected from everything Venditti's been writing. Yet I liked it because it was a done-in-one and – it's something I could tell a new reader, read this, and they don't have to know anything about Hawkman in the past, really, and they could just pick it right up and read it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the same attributes of this issue were its strengths and its weaknesses in a weird way.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I'm like, it's an issue I loved parts and I dislike parts. It's so weird.
One of the little things that I just couldn't wrap my mind around is it starts with a framing sequence of him going to his library and reading a story that, because he kept copious journals throughout all of his lives.
Yes.
Okay, I'll grant he's a prolific writer and that's just part of him across time and space. Not a problem. How exactly did he get all these journals?
That's what I was wondering too, because that's an extensive library there. How did he know to go and collect all these things in this one place? It's like, yeah, that was funny.
I did like when he was going and picking the book off the shelf, there was references to Oliver Queen not being able to remember all of his bank accounts and all of that stuff. And what I liked about that is just the reference to Ollie, Green Arrow, of course, because during the satellite era, those two were just always bickering with each other. They were just so opposed on the political spectrum that the back and forth between them was fun.
And so it's just a nod back to that.
Exactly.
which is really cool.
Venditti knows the character and is expanding the franchise and the mythos of it, yet it's got some places here and there that are definite nods to the history.
Yeah, so it was a very interesting issue. It's so different than anything I've read. So I've been loving the series, and yet you come here and you get the nods, you get the flashbacks, you get the tie-in to the main character, and yet you almost get like a little bit of a war book, which is something so different. It's almost like Venditti's little war book, Groundhog Day. There was actually a Tom Cruise movie about where he kept reincarnating and he was in a battlefield type sequence.
Edge of Tomorrow, which was based on All You Need Is Kill. My sister and I actually did an episode on the book, the manga adaptation, and the movie.
Well, here we have it in Hawkman form.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, pretty much. And it was so cool. And now, did you like the way it ended and how you basically, I guess, put it at end?
I liked it. What I found also interesting with that moment where the peace happens is on the other side, and I've lost track which side he was on this time, the green or the yellow or whatever, but he went out and was offering, you know, his candy bar or ration bar or whatever, and then the lady on the other side is offering her drink or whatever. That was Shara or whatever, who presumably is Hawkwoman.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
So that one little bit kind of implies there's another saga going on like this that's her side, you know, of events, both on this story and maybe in the overall series.
And see, I didn't catch that part. So now that's even cooler now that you pointed that out. That is pretty awesome.
So it was interesting and fun. And, you know, they haven't really played up the Hawkman, Hawkwoman stuff too much with this incarnation of Hawkman.
No, almost not at all.
Yeah, she's over in Justice League, and it mentioned in here he was a Justice Leaguer.
Yes, just kind of in passing.
Well, and I'm trying to figure out when in this continuity that would have been.
Yeah, because we have not seen that at all. I have not seen him in the Justice League to date.
I don't think so, unless he was in the original Justice League of America title at the beginning of the New 52.
And I wasn't reading that, so I have no clue.
My problem right now is trying to reconcile the various reboots and reinterpretations and reincarnations of all of these damn characters in comics.
Hey, just remember, Doomsday 10. Doomsday Clock number 10. Hey, just the ripples and the manipulations. That's how you explain it all.
Well, it's not so much explaining it all, but trying to keep it straight. In other words, I can't remember
exactly
clearly what happened in that version of Justice League of America versus, let's say, the original or the one after it or, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, it's got to be nerve-wracking because of the reboots and the changes and how the characters interact and how they are today versus how they were in the past.
Well, and Hawkman is a character that they have rebooted a few times, even though they hadn't rebooted the whole universe, and they've certainly retooled him a number of times, this series being one of them. You know, and I'm okay with all of that, but it does get kind of confusing.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that being said, this is kind of like the Hawkman I know, and I've been really loving it. I think it's a great read. I've been able to jump in and enjoy it from issue one, not having an extensive background. And it's been enjoyable, and this was so weird and so different, and it's like a reading a done in one, almost like, I don't know, like a story that would be half of an annual with another story tacked on to the end. Something that's not in the main story, just out here. Here's a special.
Or an extended version of, like I said, a holiday special.
Yeah, holiday special. Something that's just out there that's cool, but you could almost, I hate to say it, you could skip over it, but I don't recommend skipping over it. It's a cool story.
I'm wondering if this is going to have ramifications later or not, or if you're right that it's you could skip it and never notice it.
Exactly, and that's what we don't know. So I'm excited to see what comes next. I don't know if things here are going to, and maybe it's with a Hawk Girl. Maybe something's going to come of that.
Yeah. Don't know. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I agree that it's questionable how much it really kind of matters in the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah, that would be my only, I guess you could say, knock against it, because I was like, it was like a love-hate. I love Hawkman. I love the story. I love the writer. And I don't want to say hate. The dislike is, I felt like I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm reading a different book at this point.
I think the exact reason somebody might like it are the same reason somebody else might hate it.
Yes, that's a perfect way to put it. So, that being said, I mean, it was still pretty cool. So, I like to end with a candy bar and a cup of coffee trade.
Yeah. was fun. I went with a solid B on this, and I recommend the series, and this is a good Dunham one. It's not essential reading, but it's a fun read.
Uncanny again. I gave it a B as a also. I was like a one-off issue. It doesn't tie into a lot of what he's written up until now, but it was a fun story and it was a good story and I enjoyed it.
Cool. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, this will be an interesting one.
This is True Believers Spider-Man Morbius number 1, and it is reprinting Amazing Spider-Man number
101, I think it is.
101, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that very last page they have it. The very last page in the book. Yeah, 101.
This is one where I was curious as much about the format of these True Believers stuff. I'd read one of the ones that had reprinted, I think it was Web of Spider-Man number 100.
Okay.
And there's an aspect of these that you just have to understand that they were written in a different time, and yep. Storytelling was different.
Very different.
I mean, there are times where the amount of words on a page is just insane compared to modern comics. A matter of fact, this is just so verbose. It's probably got both the story content and certainly the word count of many a modern trade.
Yeah, it was so cool because when I'm reading this, there's so many words in here. It takes you a long time to read an issue like this because of the amount of material they give this. And it's not really recapping stuff that happened in the past or getting caught up to speed. It's almost like they narrate everything that they're thinking and doing in every panel. And there's several panels on the page.
Mm-hmm. There is an aspect of recapping some of what's gone before because they didn't assume you'd read the previous issue.
That is true. Yeah, that they did do that.
You know, and this, of course, introduces Morbius, the living vampire, I think is his tagline.
Yeah.
And this had Stanley editing it. I guess it was Roy Thomas that wrote this one and Gil Kane that did the art.
Yes.
And it's interesting because, I mean, Gil Kane, terrific artist. I really got to know his art through his work at DC about a couple of years, maybe a decade or so later in late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
And I think he had a little bit more of a signature style then than he had at this point.
Okay.
But it's interesting that, because I'm pretty sure Stan Lee wrote the previous one, which would have been Amazing Spider-Man number 100, where Spidey gets the extra arms and such.
Yeah, and this is kind of like the aftermath. He starts off and he's like, oh, I got these arms, what am I going to do?
Can you imagine that kind of handoff on writers with that kind of a plot change at the end of an issue and start of an issue?
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen today.
It really doesn't. Usually they clean up their mess and then hand it off to you.
Well, usually it's such a clean cut, it may as well be a different character almost by the end of the handoff.
It's true. So, I mean, here you literally have to pick up with, all right, now I got to pick up with this six-arm thing. I don't want to write a story about a six-arm guy. How am I going to fix it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but it was really cool because, like, it took me so long to read it. And I was like, I could not be reading the number of comics I do today if the writing was like this nowadays, just because it takes a lot of time. Yet it felt like it aged pretty well. Like, I read it and I didn't feel like I was reading a kid's story.
I would agree with that. I think this stuff is suitable for all ages, but it's not written down towards kids. And it is got enough story density. If anything, it's too dense compared to modern storytelling.
I would agree with that. It's almost too dense. And I appreciated that they had some stuff in here that is, you know, this was the comics code. So there's violence, but it's not kiddie violence. It's not excessive violence. It's kind of right in that middle ground where an adult can read it and a kid can read it and both can enjoy it, which is hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, did you know why they called him the living vampire?
I'm trying to remember.
Well, I read a story on this. It was the comics code back then. You couldn't write about vampires.
Right, you couldn't actually do a true vampire because of that's funny.
Yeah, so they said, oh, he's a living vampire. He's not a dead vampire. So that was like their workaround to write about vampires. It was hilarious.
I am surprised they didn't put the comics code sticker on the cover of this just kind of because they could.
Yeah, they could have. Yeah. Hmm. That would have made it a little bit cooler. They probably would have done it in the facsimile edition.
Yeah, and the difference in the facsimiles, I think they would have done that, and we get house ads and stuff in this for current comics like Superior Spider-Man and stuff like that, which is just kind of funny.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of weird. But, you know, the thing that I really like, and I know DC is doing this too, DC started doing the reprints of the, they're going to start doing facsimiles. That was in the latest previews that came out. And then they're also talking about doing dollar reprints of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really cool about that is some people have a lot of, you know, a lot of comics, runs of this or that. And you can get a lot of comics relatively inexpensive. But you get to those key issues, and you got people who hoard issues and put them in slabs, and you can't complete a run. So they create these things, and you can actually create a run that you can actually read.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some comics that were such mile markers in comics history and for certain characters that it's good to be getting them out and accessible to a wider audience.
Yeah, like, I mean, before they did that facsimile stuff or the reprints of, like, you know, Hulk 181 with Wolverine, you know, nobody's touching that thing to open it and look at it. And I always would see it, you know, hanging up on the wall, but I never, you know, you can't see the thing. And so now you can see it in the comic form with a facsimile and reprinted the way it actually looked with all the ads. And it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that they're doing this. I wish they did it for a buck, the facsimiles versus the $3.99, but oh well.
Well, and I think, like when we did the Alpha Flight one, they missed a boat there, because $5 for a reprint, and granted a little longer than usual, whatever, a little expensive even by today's standards, whereas for a buck, I think people absolutely would have checked that out, and that might have been enough to get them hooked on the trade series.
That's what I would say, too. So I like their concept of the True Believers, and I think, I know it's kind of like a cash grab having that facsimile edition, but I almost wish they would have done all the True Believers like the facsimiles, leave them as a dollar, and then have that little thing at the end, you know, add one extra page and be like, hey, if you like this story, read more here, blah, and here's the trade, or here's this, and they can give you like a little reading from here forward.
Yeah, whereas at the end of this, they basically say it's continued in the Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus Volume 3 hardcover.
Yeah, good luck with paying for that.
Yeah, you just spent a buck on a reprint. Now, how much is that omnibus?
Yeah, probably $125.
Like, come on.
Yeah, you only got to cough up $125 after they spend your hard-earned dollar here.
I think they should have done here what DC did at the back of Who's Who when it first came out. And Who's Who was just a Marvel handbook equivalent, but for DC. But there, they had a page or two, I think it might have even been the inside back cover, it's been long enough since I've looked. But anyways, that for all the characters that were in that issue, it's a, hey, this character you can go check out over in this title right now. This one, you're going to have to go read this backstory in this trade, or, you know, wherever you could go find it. But basically, if you found this character interesting, where to go find more?
Yeah, yeah. That would be really cool. So, and every now and then you'll just see some trades, but this one I was surprised read the omnibus now. That just made me kind of chuckle to myself. But now the story, what did you think of the story itself? I mean, you can't really spoil it. I mean, the comic's been out for what now, 40 years?
It doesn't mean everybody's read it.
Oh, that's true. Oh, I guess we can't spoil it.
I think really what people need to know for this is, first off, for a buck, you're not risking much. It's well worth getting on that ground alone.
And it was a fun read, I think.
It's a fun read. And first off, this era of Spider-Man, you've got Stanley, you got Roy Thomas, you got Gil Kane, you've got luminaries in the field doing stuff on the title. And some of it is stuff that, again, only Stan would think of, like, let's give this guy some extra arms and see what happens. But it's cool stuff. Granted, it's 100 issues in. It's still foundational stuff for Spider-Man when they were still expanding the Marvel Universe in ways that comic worlds just don't kind of expand as the same way today. But it you've got to take into account the word count. The story pacing is just fundamentally different. And I don't mean better or worse, but different.
Very different.
The coloring is different. It's flatter colors, but the stuff still pops off the page well.
Yeah, everything is different about older comics.
You know, and there are some panels that have no background, but not in the way a modern comic doesn't have backgrounds.
Yes, very different. It's almost like they just use shading.
Well, I mean, there are a couple where you're either doing a close-up on the face, or there's enough balloons on the word balloons on there. There's really not a whole lot of room for a background. Others,
exactly.
Tons of background.
Yeah. And I always remember the action sequences where you get all those lines. I think that was a Kirby thing, even though Kirby didn't draw this, you know, where you see the action lines of mm-hmm. people moving around. And you really don't see stuff like that nowadays.
Yeah, there's a different visual language to the comic, both in terms of, again, the action lines, the thought balloons, you know, all of those kinds of aspects. It's not unrecognizable from today's comics, but there's enough subtle differences to be noticeable if you know what to look for.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. So, I mean, all that being said, I think this is such an enjoyable book, yet I think if reading the omnibus, by the way, I do have this omnibus.
Of course you do.
I have all the omnibus. No. But I have to read it in small chunks because it's a different type of reading, and I'll read like two or three issues and then I'm done because I'm not used to it, and it takes a lot more time to consume. That's just with me, you know, I have to change my reading style.
No, I agree with that. And that's one of the things. I don't want to say it's a knock on this issue because it's not, but it's something that it's denser and stuff than modern comics that it does come across a little overwhelming with kind of a, you know, I'm still reading this. I'm you know, only so many pages in. I've been reading for how long?
Exactly.
Great, it's actually a great problem to have, but there does come a point where it's like, again, such a fundamental difference in storytelling from then and now.
Yeah. I remember I was sitting out there with my wife. I'm like, hey, I'm going to read this comic again one time before we do the review. And so I started reading it. And like 30 minutes later, I was like, man, that was a long read.
I would love to be able to take a modern comic, find a good, maybe a, not a ton in one, but an equivalent issue to this, to then basically find a way to go time travel, drop it back in that era, you know, and see how readers of that era would react to today's storytelling.
Yeah, I would imagine. I paid 15 cents and this is all I got?
Yeah.
It only took me 5 minutes.
Exactly. The outrage over the lack of story content or whatever compared to the 15 cent price point or whatever.
Yeah, that could be hilarious. I would love to see it. If only we had time travel.
It's just, I think they would have found the coloring interesting and some of the technical, the resolution aspects good. Some of the story concepts would be appealing, but the pacing.
The pacing is so different. And it's weird how slowly over time, because you've been reading for years, you might have started with something more like this, and then you went into the 80s, you go to the 90s, you go to the 2000s, and the pacing's been changing slowly, but you kind of evolved with it versus when you go back in time 30 plus years, it's almost jarring.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. But at the same time, I like going back to the roots because it helps you know who these characters really were and how the creators really saw them so that when you read them today, are they who they really were, you know, or did they change them?
Absolutely. And I think part of why comics from this era are able to be kind of key issues in a way that it's hard for a modern one to be is there's so much story, so many things happen over the course of a year or in a particular issue.
Yep.
You know, and it's just, it's a competitive market today, but it was a competitive market back then in a very different way in terms of wowing the audience, having to really, you know, tell a lot of story in those pages.
Yeah, it's true. it was so different and yet so charming at the same time. And they were able to do all this, you know, with talent that wasn't paid very well and with so many limitations on what they could do and a crowd and a marketplace that they're selling to that's so broad, mm-hmm. you know, from teenagers to men to children, that it's so different than what we have today. Because now you can almost see the writers are writing to an older audience because the comics market has aged. You know, most of the readers are 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're writing to that and they're changing things and they're like, they're not writing like this. And it's something that every now and then I miss it.
Yeah. And I think if this were told today, it absolutely would be a 6-issue story.
Yeah, it definitely would. Definitely it would be, especially if it was Bendis. This would be the first trade.
I guess the question is, if it were a modern, you know, 6-issue story, do you think they would have covered as much ground as this issue?
Probably not.
That's the part I'm wondering.
Yeah, I, you know, looking at it now, I think one issue would have been dealing with the six arms. The next issue would have been dealing with Morbius coming across the sea. The next issue would have been the confrontation. And the fourth issue would have been the surprise that came at the end with another character.
Mm-hmm.
And I really could see four issues out of this.
Easily. And then you toss in, they've got to have some subplot stuff to go hang out at the Daily Bugle, do some stuff with Gwen, all that kind of stuff. It adds a little bit more right there.
Yeah. But, this, you know, you go back to this stuff, and I guess this is still, is this Silver Age or is this Bronze Age? I don't know.
I'm thinking Silver Age at this point, late Silver Age.
Okay, late Silver. It's like, I can still read this. If you get much older than this, like Gold Age, I really can't read that stuff.
No, I agree with that. When exactly did this issue come out?
That, I was just thinking about that. I was like, I should have researched it before I came online. I'm going to try to pull up ComicDB. Are you doing the same thing?
No, I'm actually looking in the Indicia to see if they've got it, but it's such tiny print. And I don't think it says the original. If it says the original copyright, it's smaller than my eyes can handle.
Okay. I'm going to try and find it in Comic Book Database here. And it is Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, 101. I'm thinking early 70s.
There's a problem with the database. I'm getting errors.
All right.
All right, never mind. That's what I'm thinking, early 70s.
So definitely, again, for a buck, you can't go wrong with this. I think it's well worth doing. If you're curious about early Marvel stuff, the True Believers line is well worth checking out. And if you're willing to pay a little bit more and want the old ads and stuff like that, I think the facsimile editions are worth checking out too.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been really enjoying the facsimile editions because that's what I kind of remember when I first started reading comics. Some of those advertisements, you look at them, you know, like the bodybuilding stuff. And it was so cheesy, but, you know, brings back some nostalgia when you see that.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to go with a B minus on this. I think it was good, but for, you know, the way I've been, you know, evolved as a reader to expect, frankly, so much less, it did come across just incredibly wordy in a few places and a little overwhelming. But if that's the worst thing I can say about an issue is it had too much story, I think I can live with that.
Yeah. For me, I gave it a little bit higher score just because I was like, they gave you a lot of stuff here for the price. I gave it the old B+.
I can
and,
see that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was fun. Like you said, it will slow you down, though. So buyer beware as far as like if you're time conscious, you're going to spend a little more time with this issue.
Absolutely, yeah. It's, again, just a different era of storytelling.
Now, yeah.
Before we move on to our other book, I do want to mention one thing.
Okay.
I was out shopping today.
Okay.
At lunch, went into a Walmart, obviously hit the toy section because, I mean, why not? And I bought one of the Marvel Legends series action figures.
Okay, cool.
It's the six-arm Spider-Man.
That's awesome. So you bought this character.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So they're actually making them.
Now, can you imagine back then thinking, you know, they're going to... First off, the action figure was $18.99 or something. You know, a 15-cent comic would spawn an action figure at that price? I mean, come on.
And they probably wouldn't think that this thing would be so popular that they'd be making toys out of it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, back then, these things were, you know, that's what's happening this issue. Man, by next issue, it's not gone and forgotten. But you know what I mean? They've moved on to three or four other ideas.
Exactly. And little did they know it would stick.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought that was funny, and I thought I'd mention
that. That's hilarious.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Let's do that.
This is Sonata number 1. It is from the Shadowline imprint over at Image Comics, and I got it primarily because of the art and the creative team. It is Brian Haberlin, one of his products, and he does a lot of his stuff using 3D models for the art and such. I always find his approach to comics interesting. He's a really solid storyteller, and the visuals in here were just, I mean, fantastic.
Oh, they were amazing. That is the reason why I bought this too, was the art and previews.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw it and I was like, I was breathtaking. I was like, wow, this is really cool looking.
Got a nice clean kind of line work for the lead characters. You've also got a fairly well rendered yet looking kind of hand drawn for the landscapes, the buildings and such. It's from a storytelling perspective, he's taken tools that have been around for 20 years, using more modern versions, of course, gets some incredible mileage out of it, is able to get a lot of work done very quickly and effectively. I've gone to many of his panels at Comic-Con, C2E2, and other places. Always enjoy them, definitely recommend them. But as cool as the art was, the story really blew me away because it was rock solid, starts from a blank slate, builds up this world, builds up a couple of different groups in the world, and the inevitability of conflict between them.
Exactly. That was really cool. There was so much world building going on here. I was like, wow, he's building this thing up to be a really large story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. I love world building, so having that, having these guys flying these, I can't remember what the creatures are called, but they're almost like pterodactyl-looking creatures, was so cool. I mean, there's so much, almost like it had a fantasy yet sci-fi mix.
Yeah, yeah. It's a thermosaur or something like that.
It's thermosaur.
Well, how would you describe it?
It's almost like bird-like, but it looks like a pterodactyl, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Almost like a dinosaur version of a giant seagull, almost, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, and the people ride those.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so cool. I mean, like, I saw that, and I was looking at the art, and remember in previews, I was like, all right, I got to read this. This looks awesome.
He does some incredible creatures and stuff like this. In Anomaly, in Faster Than Light, in a lot of his stuff. And what's cool is because these are 3D models he's using, the consistency of the anatomy and the way the characters look is rock solid.
Which is cool. Yeah, I agree with you there. Completely rock solid. Everything was just totally amazing.
And I loved how, like, when we first get introduced to the lead character of Sonata, she's set up in a way, it's like, she knows she's getting in trouble for what she's doing, but she's got to do what she's doing. She can't not do it. And there's so much character imbued into her instantly.
Instantly. She's breaking the rules for the greater good because it's something she knows she has to do. And it tells you a lot about her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which was so cool. And then immediately you get introduced to these characters, the sleeping giants on the planet, which I thought that is going to have a big part in a story somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. What's up with them? What's the backstory? There's, you know, both the threat is introduced, but also a lot of questions about it.
Yeah. And this is really like the plot here is kind of like along the lines of people that are from a planet where the resources are limited. They went to a different planet where they saw it as unlimited resources, and they're basically pioneers here. And is there enough to go around? And that's the essence of the comic.
There's an aspect of the Old West here of, you know, hey, you know, can we get enough water and food to survive? And also an aspect of sci-fi of, well, you can crash land onto this thing, but yeah, you're not getting back out, so you got to make it work here.
Exactly. And then the different factions and I wouldn't say races, but they're, because they look like they're human beings, these two groups, but the way that they're brought up, their essence, how they are, and the conflicts that come from that. There's people that are more sharing and more nurturing and more let's come together, and then there's people who are this is mine.
Yeah, and the son of the lead guy from that this is mine group, I get the feeling we're going to get like a Romeo Juliet kind of a deal with him and Sonata.
Ah, I could see that. Now that you say that, I could definitely see that. That would be have some tension in there, a love story with some conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have other groups in here, too. You have alien groups that play a part in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And some people interact better with aliens and some do not.
Right, right. We see the Lumani, who may or may not be natives to this planet. I forget. But it's just there's a lot of world building that's going on. And the amount of progress the story makes in just this issue is pretty impressive. And it's not just, wow, isn't this a cool idea, but it's character, it's revelations, it's...
World building.
Yeah, world building in all the right ways.
Yeah. I felt like this was a full package. You get a lot of material in here. You get great art. You get characterization, world building, and there's enough to hook you here where I'm excited to read the next issue.
Yeah. I came in here thinking, okay, I'm going to get some computer-generated art. I'm kind of curious how he did some of it. No doubt I'll find out at one of his panels in San Diego. But and I was thinking, yeah, maybe the story will work for me. Maybe it won't. But that's not really why I'm here. But to be really won over by the story. really impressed me, and they did a terrific job.
Awesome. So they added it to your pull list.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now, the list grows.
Other thing to mention is, since this is one of Haberlin's books, he does tend to do augmented reality. And if I recall correctly, at the beginning, it was mentioning the AR app. I thought there, in the inside front cover, get the companion app, see how the comic was made, view behind-the-scenes content, and much more. Go to experienceanomaly.com/sonata, download the thing, and then you just hold the camera over it, different pages, and it'll reveal things.
Oh, I didn't even read that little bit up there, so I'm glad you pointed that out to me, because I'm going to go check that out now.
In Medieval Spawn versus, I think it was Witchblade or whatever that he did last year, you could do it for every page, get the script, the pencils, the inks, the colors for Faster Than Light, which was a spaceship-based thing. At one point, they had a like the ability to kind of walk around the spaceship.
Oh, that's freaking cool. So that's really awesome.
I didn't have a chance to look into what he's done for this, but the nice thing is, because it's essentially downloadable content, he'll add more over time.
So it's always growing and changing based on what he wants to throw out there. And that's really cool that he's sharing it versus you have to now go by the trade to get some additional information.
Exactly.
And that's rare in today's world.
If you ever have a chance to go by the Anomaly Productions booth at a convention where they're at, definitely take the time to do it. Spend a few minutes there. They usually have a monitor showing off their stuff and really seeing the augmented reality stuff. And just reading the comics and the stories. It's well worth it.
That I'm going to do that next time I see that, for real.
So, well,
but this was a really cool book. I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, same here. It was pretty much everything I think you can expect and want out of a comic. Solid story, accessible, obviously, first issue, that helps. Hopefully it'll keep that accessibility moving forward. But it's a fun new world to explore, and they did a really good job on it.
I agree wholeheartedly. And this is a book that I would recommend people pick up if they like sci-fi, if they like fantasy, and if they like good art.
Yeah, and it's got a nice blend of the sci-fi and the fantasy. I would also say if you like the concept of a Western, but are not you know, locked into the actual Western setting,
you probably would enjoy this.
Yeah, this is worth checking out.
Yeah, so I think all around it, a lot of people should enjoy this.
Yeah, and this was, I don't know, what, 30-ish pages of content?
Definitely more than a normal book. It actually has a page count down there. I just noticed. Let me see. Last page doesn't have one. 28 pages.
28 pages.
Story.
All right. So, almost...
You get more than normal.
Almost time and a half a normal one for the regular $3.99.
Yeah, see, you can't beat that. You get a great price, you get a lot of story, and I'm on board.
Yeah. And what I liked is it ended also on a tease of there's this whole new thing to explore, but even without that hook at the end, I was already interested in the story and can see a lot of story possibility for where it can go.
Yeah, me too. And this was one of the weird things when I picked it up. Haberlin, I should have known that. I'm like, I know that name. I can't remember who. And I was like, oh yeah, Anomaly, but I haven't read it yet, even though it's in a stack to be read. And I picked it up just based on the art. I was like, this sounds cool. It looks really cool. And I'm so thankful I did.
Yeah. For me, it was an A+, 5 out of 5. Definitely recommend it, and I think everyone should check it out.
Well, I went and I gave it an A, so I'll let you do the A+. I gave it a solid A. I loved it. Good. Oh, man, I'm definitely close to giving it the plus, though.
Anything in particular that might have held you back?
The only nitpick I had in here, if there's any nitpick, was, okay, when I open up the first page and they have those green text boxes with the white text in there, I don't know why, but my reading, it was hard to read.
I can understand that. This one actually worked surprisingly well for me, but I've read a few where it's like red on blue or something like that, and it's like just, you know.
It hurts my, like, it's hard to read. But, you know, for that, go ahead and give it the A+. I'm going to bump it up.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm going to go with it. It was a heck of a read, and just for some coloring, I'm not knocking it.
I was going to say, if you're going to knock anything this week for that, it's Batman Who Laughs.
Exactly. Oh, that was horrible. I couldn't read it.
Yeah, I skimmed the issue because I literally could not read it.
Yeah, and then I was like, okay, then we're supposed to go back and read, you know, all the different colored letters. I was like, oh, this is just horrible. I can't stand it.
Well, the different colored letters were at first the only thing I was reading, and I couldn't see any real pattern or rhyme or reason to them. So I'm like, well, I guess it's not what I'm thinking it was, like a hidden code or something. And it's like, yeah, forget it.
Yeah, it was horrible. So yeah, I literally don't like that. If they just changed the dialogue boxes to be like a white box with black text, I probably would love the book.
I can understand that.
Yeah, so yeah, that was frustrating for me too. I'm like, I don't like it when they use the colorful text boxes, even though I know they do it for artistic purposes, because as I get older, here I am, I'm 45, I'll be 46 in October. I'm like, that stuff kind of bugs me now.
I dislike it because it's hard to read. Sometimes it's hard to tell even who the character's supposed to be because they're doing it as a way to color code or whatever. And when it's color coded and I don't get it, it's like, okay, that's unfortunate. I'm missing something and it's poor storytelling. But when it's actually hard to read because they don't understand color, that I have a major problem with.
Exactly. And they seem to always pick colors that people are the most colorblind with.
That don't have good contrast and therefore illegible when you put them next to each other.
Yeah, and I'm just like, why did they do this? Once again, I go back to, hey, editor, why don't you give them a little nudge to not do this?
Yeah, I think what they should do is give that letterer the next script, take it into Word, flip it into those colors, have them forced to read it that way.
That would be awesome.
And give them a hard copy.
Give them a hard copy and just be like, read this. And when they're like, ah, this is unreadable. Exactly. That's what you're trying to sell our customers for $4 a pop.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. Hey, so besides buying a six-armed Spider-Man, how'd your week go? Did you get caught up on all your reading? Are you good still?
I am still caught up. I am hitting the point where I'm probably going to start falling behind a little bit because I'm trying to get some episodes in the can early, so there's stuff coming out during Comic-Con and such.
Ah.
But I read everything this week, Event Leviathan, which was good, not brilliant.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I thought it would be better.
Yeah, I was hoping for better. What passes as a world's greatest detective these days in the DC universe, I'm not sure I totally agree with, but okay.
I agree.
trying to think what else I read. I got almost 24 items this week, which these days is a big week for me, drop in the bucket compared to what I was getting a year or two back. But most of it was just kind of okay.
Yeah, I've read through probably 70% of my stack, so I still have some of it sitting out there that I haven't read yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, like you said, some decent stuff, but I haven't had anything mind-blowing this week. Other than, I really enjoyed Sonata. That was probably the best thing I've read this week.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that was by far the best thing. Hawkman was solid. Most of the rest of the stuff this week was okay.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised with Event Leviathan, though. They picked Mally for the art, which was fine, but it's so different, you know, from what we were reading with the Superman books going into that. And then it just seemed like the buildup was better than the first issue. I was just like, huh, it started off really slow. And I was like, all right, this is, I just came out feeling okay.
I think the problem is when you've got a 6-issue arc in action building up to it, you then have a special building up to it, and then you go to kind of a slow-paced first chapter. You're like, I'm 6, 7, 8 issues, depending how you count the Event Leviathan special, or Superman Rising one, actually, into the story.
Yeah, you guys have been teasing me all this time, and now you guys slam on the brakes.
Yeah, you slow-boat it? I mean, come on.
That's exactly how I felt. Like, I felt like I've been teased for the last 6 months, and now... Okay, let's slow this thing down. It's like, no, let's speed up. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was great. And I was expecting better.
Yeah, it just felt kind of like, okay, you know, like a little bit above average.
Yeah.
Yeah, so which is disappointing because I was going into it thinking this is going to be the event for DC.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little jaded right now.
Yeah, I can see that. I get jaded sometimes too.
Some of what DC's doing is not that great. There's so much War of the Realms stuff going on at Marvel that I'm not reading War of the Realms.
Yeah, that makes it hard to pick Marvel books when we get to the Marvel section. They have so much, but you're not reading 75%.
Well, and I'm getting some of the ones that tie in, but I don't have the context for why I should care about some of the stuff.
Yeah, because that's a big, big thing going on right now. It's like, and it's impacting everything, and some things it shouldn't even be impacting, but it is. I'm like, why did they come out with the Squirrel Girl issue? It didn't really have anything to do with it, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm getting, I think, a lot more cynical and certainly a lot more selective on my buying in that kind of regard.
I've actually come to that realization again during this order. I'm started my order, and there's some stuff that I'm just reading, and I'm like, I've been reading it since the beginning, and I can't just continue to do that because I'm like, man, I'm not really enjoying it. It takes a lot of time and it's a lot of money, and I basically am voting with my dollars. I'm like, why am I voting for really mediocrity? Because like I'm looking at the Star Wars stuff in particular, because like I started off, I have all the Star Wars books, everything that came out, and I'm not even that huge of a Star Wars fan, and I'm like, why am I getting, you know, like Dr. Aphra? It started off good, but now it's just ho-hum, whatever. I'm like, I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah, I dropped all the Star Wars stuff for similar reasons. I mean, I'm a Star Wars fan, and it was good stuff, but it wasn't essential reading.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of where I am. I've actually been enjoying more of the spinoffs that Greg Pak's been doing with those Age of Republic, which are just like little one-offs, you know, little stories that don't matter.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can understand that.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to ask you today, I go back to your thing about riding crutches and stuff. Hey, the Hawkman issue, I was opening it up, and that first page, they kind of did like a recap of, you know, who I am and, you know, what I, you know, I'm, you know, I'm Carter Hall. I am Hawkman, you know, I'm an archaeologist, da, 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 da. And he goes through all this stuff. Instead of having the big Shazam thing over there on the left for the Blu-ray, it seems like they could do like another page of story and just have that little thing like Marvel does. I am Hawkman, and here's who he is, and you don't have to waste all these text boxes.
Kind of the previously on?
Yeah, something like that. I know you call them writing crutches, but I was just like, I think you would get more story if they, you know, because for whatever reason, he felt like he had to recap everything about who he is, and which is fine. It didn't hurt the story, but I'm like, all right, let's move that over, and then we can get the story going.
I disagree.
Okay.
I hear where you're coming from, and I understand it, but what I've found is the recap they give us the previously on, much like TV shows, they cheat, they lie.
They cheat, they lie.
And
not
when
jaded
you do,
at all.
Not at all, not at all, not even cynical. Whereas when they do it in the story, it's in the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand. It's just one thing where like every now and then I'll pick up an issue, and it's especially when I'm reading a lot of material, and I'll get like 5 or 6 pages in, and then I'll start to remember, oh yeah, this is what's going on. And I'm like, man, it's so frustrating. I wish they'd just tell me, this is what's going on. And I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, just to jog my memory.
Yeah, but to me, a well-told story is jogging your memory, telling you what you need to know very subtly so you don't realize that they're jogging your memory. It's not like they're violently shaking it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But you kind of, oh yeah, I remember that right as it's becoming relevant, and they ease you into it. They're giving you a guided tour through the story.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
But when modern comics almost need to have that pop-up video kind of a thing of, hey, this thing they're saying here, it's cryptic, we're not going to tell you, you know, did you know that was so-and-so? Did you catch this? You know, because they leave half the story off the page.
Very true.
You know, I'm reading into it, using Hawkman again as an example, that was probably Shiara, you know, Hawkwoman or whatever. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a coincidence it was a similar name.
Yeah.
There's no way to tell. And so, I don't know. To me, there's an aspect of they've got the story they've created. The comic is the communication vehicle of that story through multiple hands. The writer first does it as the script. The script gets reinterpreted by the artist. The writer can then maybe compensate or add to that, depending how well the collaboration goes. And then it comes out, and we pull out of it what we pull out of it. And we're not always going to pull out of it what's even on the page sometimes, because we'll misinterpret or misunderstand or whatever.
Very true.
But the story we come out of a comic with in our brain versus the one that was in the writer's brain, how close they are, how far apart they are, to me is a gauge of how successful, how good the comic was from a technical sense. It's also impossible to truly gauge, because it's not like you could just take that out and do a, you know, a hash comparison or a diff or something, you know?
Yeah. It's I see your side, and I understand my side, and you can see where I come from.
Absolutely.
And it's so interesting how Marvel's very strict. They do that with everything, and DC's the opposite. They make sure they leave that off with everything. So I guess at the editorial, you know, the higher ups, they have a belief like you at DC, and I'm Marvel, they maybe have a belief like me. It makes it easier. So, I mean, it's just interesting to see. I just like to see that. And you even see it in Image. You see guys who, like, majority wrote, like, Marvel stuff when they move over to Image, like Rick Remender. He does the recap. And other writers don't necessarily do it. So it's just kind of cool how writers do that or don't do that. And sometimes I feel like it's needed. Other times I understand exactly what you're saying.
It's funny because I think if you were to read any story from any one of the Crisis on Multiple Earth trades,
yeah,
guaranteed to be in just certainly the first chapter of any one of those stories, the first installment, maybe not every issue of it, but probably most, but at least the first one of every story, there is going to be at least one page, partially if not fully dedicated to the concept of multiple worlds, parallel timelines, how that all works.
Yeah,
or at least what they are. There was Superman, Silver Age, Golden Age, the crossover, they met, you know, Justice Society over here, Justice League over there. Whereas now, oh, well, just take it either as given or maybe throw it in the previously on thing and be done with it.
It's true. Very true. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'm coming around to your way of thinking. I'll say that. Yet at the same time, I do use my crutch when it's there.
Well, and again, there are certain crutches that are more acceptable than others. For the longest time, most comics had a caption blurb on the first title page or whatever of, you know, Peter Parker was bitten by radioactive Spider-Man. Superman was rocketed from Krypton when it blew up. You know, those sorts of high-pitched things.
Yeah.
Oh, I get the premise of the character. But when they need to spell out the previous chapters of a story, I mean, can you imagine having to write the previously on blurb for Amazing Spider-Man 102?
The first three pages are just dialogue. Yeah, that would not be fun. Hey, and by the way, have you read a Rick Remender book like Low or I'm trying to think of his other ones, Black Science or anything like that?
I read Fear Agent.
Fear Agent. Okay, I'm not sure what Fear Agent, because I think he did that originally at Dark Horse. But, I mean, like his ones at Image, Low and Black Science in particular. Like Black Science, it was written, it was very confusing because there's a lot of time travel in there. That the paragraph just kept getting longer and longer, and the print was so small that it was literally like it felt like 2/3 of the front cover was recapping what has happened in this comic. And I was like, oh my gosh, it was excessive.
Yeah, but if you've got to tell that much of the backstory that way, that means you're not being kind of accessible or forgivable or graceful to the audience in the story itself.
And I would agree with that because Black Science, it was like, oh, it was, to me, I know some people out there must love it, but it was, I read it from the beginning and I read it to the end, and now I don't think I'll do that again, but it was a chore. I loved it at the beginning, and then it became a chore reading it, and it's like, I just kept getting it because I have always gotten it, and I'm just going to keep getting it, and I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, and I'm not suggesting that everything has to take place in a dialogue balloon or a caption or something like that. We don't have to be told that way on everything. I'm okay with the occasional footnote of, hey, remember this thing that happened 6 months ago or a year and a half ago or 2 years ago? I mean, one of the things that was in the dialogue of Heroes in Crisis was what had happened with Wally in terms of his family, that kind of a stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
But there was never any point of reference of where it happens. You could actually go read some of those stories.
Exactly, yeah. Very true.
So there's a happy medium to be had where you can give kind of the cliff notes, give them what they need, but if you want more, here's where to go, without making people feel stupid, forgetful, unable to understand what the story is, or like they've got to have a PhD in the history of these characters.
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes you go in there and you feel like a complete moron when you're reading, and then I realize, hey, it's not me. It's this guy writing.
I am more and more of that opinion the older I get.
Yeah, I'm like, it's not me. It's him. And then I realize, and I'm like, huh, all right, makes sense.
I mean, there are certain cases where people just read a story wrong.
Yes.
Maybe not the whole story, maybe an aspect. Oh, I misinterpreted this or whatever. That happens.
I agree.
And I don't blame the reader. Hell, I've been that reader. I sometimes am that reader very actively. But there are times where I think they could be a lot more forgiving and, again, graceful and expect that and not have a story that's so obtuse that if you blink at the wrong time, you miss the story.
I would agree. That's where I am. So Yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about, and I think writers need to do a better job sometimes of making the books accessible, bringing the reader up to speed, jogging our memory in an artful, respectful way while moving the story forward. They do that, we don't need recaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
So let's see, coming up, we've got the preview spotlight. The deadline for that is going to be Saturday morning, July 6th. Now, if you can get stuff in early, that would be greatly appreciated, because I'm starting to, like I said, get gearing up for Comic-Con and such. I will, of course, be at Comic-Con. If you're going to be there, let me know if you want to meet up and stuff ahead of time, because I go full-on zombie mode sometimes at the convention. often don't hear my phone and that kind of a stuff. And if you want to be sure to meet up with me, we'll try to set up a place or whatever. If not, that's fine. Enjoy your convention or what have you. I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun. It's certainly big and definitely overwhelming, but there's just so much there.
I like that. Full on zombie mode.
Well, it's just sensory overload. There's so much noise. There's so much going on. And again, I'm trying to take in as much as I can, but often in the process miss quite a bit of it.
Yeah, we'll have a fun time.
Yeah, that's the plan. So we're not going to be doing a teleconference in July. We'll probably do one in August. Last time or two, it's been like me, Franklin, and I think last time Sam was there. This time, not so much. Marvin thought he was going to show, didn't make it. Probably something came up, whatever, that happens. But that is an evening, a month that I'm setting aside for that kind of stuff that I could be spending either editing podcasts or reading or, you know, watching TV or movies and stuff like that. So if people are no longer interested, we may stop doing it. If people are interested, we'll keep doing it. So just something to think about.
All right, cool.
So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Justice League number 26 from DC, Wolverine and the Infinity Watch number 5 from Marvel, and Usagi Yojimbo number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.